Well, I'm going to be very brief because we are 4 minutes behind, and you want to hear John Foley. I was going to tell you something about him, but I'll just read that he is a distinguished professor of the humanities at Missouri. So all the other titles and the fact that he's editor of oral tradition. Okay, can you hear me there, Sarah? John is very distinguished, that's all I've said so far. And his talk looks very interesting, and I was just going to, the only other thing I was going to say is that he's in a long tradition of seeing the connection between oral societies in the post-digital or the digital world, from Innes and McLuhan through to a nice quotation from David Riesman, must have been written in the 50s. We can see that a pre-literate society dependent on the fluid, fugitive nature of the spoken word may have certain resemblances in the way its emotions are organized to a post-literate society, which might have moved away from print or be skipping it. In both, the encapsulating and isolating possibilities of print are absent. In both, symbols are given weight by their setting, by the local affective color, so to speak, rather than by their logicality. And that's David Riesman in the 50s. So we're going to hear how the story has progressed. John.
Well, thank you very much, Alan. And I'd like to start by thanking everyone associated with the workshop for the opportunity to be here, especially Mark Turin and Imogen Gunn, who have been so kind in arranging my opportunity and in corresponding beforehand. I'd like also to thank them both not only for this conference and for the chance to be here, but also for the work that they're doing to facilitate studies in oral literature, oral tradition worldwide. I have a plan for the lecture, which I think will be available on your handout as well as on the PowerPoint up in front of you, and it consists of 6 parts. We'll start off by looking at the basic homology or comparison, I stress not identity, between oral tradition and the internet. Then we'll spend some time thinking about what I call agora theory. That may be a new term to a lot of you. It's a new term to me, so I expect it's a new term to you as well. Third, we'll talk about the homology and the possibilities it makes available to us representing oral traditions electronically. And then 4, also studying oral traditions electronically. 5th, I'd like to introduce you to my current project, which is nearing maturation now, called the Pathways Project. We've already heard that word used here this morning, I'm happy to say. And I take pathways from Homer, actually, from Book 8 of the Odyssey, where Homer explains that a singer is not someone who has a great memory or a great voice, but rather someone whom the muse has taught pantoias oimas, all kinds of pathways. So a singer's ability, or in linguistic terms, competence, consists of navigation of those pathways. And then 6, a short announcement toward the end. I have with me, and I'll be happy to share with anyone who would like them after the lecture, small cards, business-sized cards with URLs for our various projects. Sometimes it's easier to do that than to try and jot down a URL. So I'll have those up here in front after the lecture is over. And they are for our Center for Studies in Oral Tradition, the Pathways Project, and the new society that we're starting. I'd like to make sure that I thank 2 people that are very important to everything we do at my 2 centers, the Center for Studies in Oral Tradition and Center for Electronic Research, and that is the current IT or technology manager, Mark Jarvis, and his predecessor, Jamie Stevens, who have written most of the architecture for what we do. So to start then with topic 1, the basic homology, OT and IT, that is oral tradition and internet technology. Of course, superficially highly disparate technologies, but I think fundamentally homologous in that both technologies foster a radical democracy in communication, and their core dynamic which I believe is shared, is that of navigating through networks. In other words, they do not involve, by and large, brick-and-mortar artifacts, but rather webs of potentials, of possibilities to explore. They're therefore co-creative, participatory, contingent, and emergent. The last two of those words making us who have spent a lot of time with text sometimes rather nervous. They both espouse and thrive under the aegis of rule-governed variation. And I contrast this to texts, which according to ideology at least, our reigning ideology still, I think, are fixed, that offer us a preordained itinerary, not one of our own choosing. Oh, yes, the reaction and the reception to that fixed itinerary is of our own choosing, but the object itself is not. It brings up an issue of authorship, of course, with texts, and I compare here oral traditional performances and tradition and internet performances. I'll be speaking a little bit later on the concept from IT that I like to apply to oral tradition of distributed authorship, which I think is a more accurate way to think about oral tradition than simple textual authorship. So to move to agora theory then, originally the idea of agora, the Greek word, the Greek concept, the Greek place, is a brick and mortar marketplace where business transactions happened. Things were bought and sold, people encountered one another in the flesh, FTF as we say. But for our purposes here, I'm thinking of agora in a different sense. I'm encouraging a semantic shift to what you see in green in the PowerPoint. Verbal marketplaces, where the transactions that take place are communicative. Now, in order to make things as clear as I could, I've included a definition here of agora as verbal marketplace. And by this I mean a virtual site for exchange, a public space and nexus where knowledge, art, and ideas are shared via whatever medium the community has adopted as the default technology, whatever medium that happens to be. So I thought you might like some relief in the form of a photographic representation of the Athenian agora, or what's left of it. And then we move to the three agoras, which I generally, in a what the physicists would call a coarse-grained kind of analysis, prescribe as a heuristic, a way to think about rather than an airtight characterization, a way to think about different kinds of communication. First, the T-agora, or textual marketplace, still, I think, the default medium for most of us, whether we recognize it or not. The electronic agora, or E-agora, of course, emerging and ever more ubiquitous, probably by the hour, never mind the week. And the O-agora, the oral marketplace, I think history has shown just in the misadventures of folklorists and anthropologists, for instance, that it is a foreign territory for text-based scholars. In my mind, it's very similar to the E-agora, in that both of them prescribe navigating through networks as the underlying logic or dynamic. So, to say a few things about all of them, each agora supports different kinds of exchange and use. Each agora demands a different kind of fluency, at least a basic fluency. Speaking only one agora language, that is, confining oneself to T-agora, E-agora, or O-agora communication, amounts to an ideology because options are precluded before you begin. The ideal, then, again, from my point of view, would be fluency or citizenship in multiple agoras, not to restrict oneself to one way of speaking and receiving, but to at least be able to manage a basic communicative fluency in all of them. Important to have a disclaimer, always in the preface of the book or sometime during the lecture, so here's mine. The OAGRA and EAGRA are homologous, and I mean that according to what the Greek roots mean in homologous. OT and IT, I believe, are similar because, unlike texts, they mime the way we think. Cognitive psychology is beginning to show us that. But they're certainly not identical technologies, not at all. So the homology is meant as suggestive, in and of itself, I hope, and to support two specific opportunities. And here are the two opportunities then. We've already heard a good deal and some very, very interesting work already this morning about the first one. The two opportunities: representing oral traditions and studying oral traditions. So to start with representing, and with our particular emphasis at my center, we've been working on something we call an e-edition or electronic edition, and in particular here, this one is Halil Baygoric, one of the singers recorded by Milman Perry and Albert Lord in the 1930s. Preserved on great big aluminum records, now transferred to digital medium, although the aluminum records are holding up wonderfully well after all this time. He is from what we used to call Yugoslavia, what we would call today Bosnia. Exists as a brick and mortar book, this edition does, in the Folklore Fellows Communications series published by the Finnish Academy, of course for a price. It also exists as a performance, resynchronized, as I like to think of it, its parts put back together online, and that's available for free. So you can go to it and use it anytime you like. Now, what you see in the right-hand menu bar is simply PDFs of all of the contents of the book. So the entire book is there. But in addition, there is a text translation only and an audio, so you can listen to the entire performance. If you have the patience for 1,021 lines of South Slavic epic, which was once explained to me as tomcats fighting with one another, I didn't really appreciate that, but I understand people have different tastes. And then also we have a performance, which is a hypertext edition of it. So let me start the audio. There'll be an introduction of 29 seconds. And here is the performance. You can see the original is on the left, English translation on the right, and you see a number of links. These are a glossary I call Apparatus Fabulosus, a story-based apparatus as opposed to Apparatus Criticus. And the commentary is also linked in that same box to the right so that you can listen, have the original, have the translation, the commentary, and the glossary without leaving the page. We won't go through the whole hour, probably a bit much. Well, studying oral traditions are another topic that I believe this homology between OT and IT makes more available, or in some cases uniquely available. Our journal, which was founded in 1986, about 6 years ago now, was brought to the internet and made, thanks to our university, open access, searchable, and I think most important, free of charge. So 25 years then, more than 500 articles, more than 10,000 pages of scholarly discussion on the world's oral traditions, now available to everyone. And the level of the playing field was a phrase that we heard earlier. Now anyone with a browser and a computer And we specifically have formulated it in PDFs, downloadable PDFs, so that there'll be no disadvantage for people who do not have more advanced computer systems. So that's all available to people now. The results of that have been more dramatic than I thought they would be. Democratic engagement has presented itself in terms of the number of readers, which our maximum subscription was about 1,200 in paper. It's now over 40,000. And in 200 countries. I was saying to Mark last night at dinner that there are now as many readers in Beijing as in Chicago, which, again, was a big surprise, and I'm really glad of that. What we didn't anticipate at all was the number of contributors from places who had not had a chance to participate before. So developing countries especially were having manuscript submissions, which have to pass the same review as any other manuscript that comes in, of course. But this then gives a voice to radically underrepresented groups and fields. We've attached to that what we call e-companions, that is photos, videos, audios, slideshows, and so on, to illustrate the oral traditions that are being talked about descriptively in the articles. So just to give you a small taste of that. This is the home page for the journal. Our last issue happens to be Oral Tradition in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. Most of the time, our issues are miscellaneous, with contents from all over and throughout history. This one was more unified. It just happened to be more unified. But up in the search box, up in the right-hand corner up here, if you, for instance, typed in Africa as keyword, what you would come up with is 90 articles that bear on Africa in some way. Now, this is not a bibliography. Every word of every text of those articles is immediately available for download and printing. So it enfranchises, again, people who do not have advanced library systems and so forth. Another project, and one that we're very excited about, actually, is the Pathways Project. And this project is meant to probe the homology of OT and IT in various ways. There is a discussion of the three agras that I described before. There is a discussion of what I call the Museum of Verbal Art, which has been heavily tilted toward textualized phenomena, and thereby has eliminated a great deal of the world's population in the process. Single versus distributed authorship is another topic that is taken up. And then one that I think is fundamental to the study of oral traditions, and also to, we heard about it again with Pathways this morning, repetition versus recurrence. And I distinguish between this as a brick and mortar versus a virtual, in a way, that a second version of an oral traditional performance is never a repetition. It is an idiomatic recurrence of that particular kind of surfing, if you like, of the tradition. So that topic becomes very, very important over the two media. Pathways Project has two parts. It has a book, a regular book, which will be out in the middle of next year. But it's a morphing book, and I'll explain a bit about that in a second. And then it has a wiki website, which so far the wiki element has not been fully implemented, and I'll explain how that works in a second. So to start with the first of the two parts, the morphing book, this book is set up to be read not linearly or sequentially, but in innumerable different ways. That is, it consists of interconnected parts without a hierarchy. So in order to understand how it works, then, one needs to conceive of multiformity and not linear sequence. And it's entitled Pathways of the Mind for reasons I discussed before. But it's still a book. No matter what one does to it, it's still a book, and it has page numbers. So it's an artifact of the Tiagra. The reason I wanted a book in this project is both to illustrate how a book can, in some ways, ape or mime the kind of exploration we do in oral tradition and the internet, and at the same time show its limitations. So it's both an example and a counterexample of what's going on in the rest of the project. Publication date, when it comes out next summer, that will be the end, until for some reason it might be reprinted or revised, but that's it. The TIAGRA limits the morphing. Of course, the Wiki website will keep on developing in various ways. That's one thing I know from a graduate student onward, and I was anthropologists were very helpful in educating me on this. I was always worried when I turned in a manuscript that, my gosh, 2 weeks later I'd find something else, or I'd think differently, or somebody would instruct me that I'd done something wrong, and there was no way to take it back. Well, this project is devoted to the idea of being able to supplement, add, even to take it back. So the Wiki website, the other half of the project, is to be navigated as the user wishes, just as the book is to an extent to be navigated as the user wishes. You make multiple visits, you have multiple experiences. There's no single write sequence or sampling. There is variation within limits, as we see in both of these media, OT and IT, and it will continue to evolve with contributions beginning to mount once we get past one more part of the evolution. But it will always be, and I want to be straightforward about this, it will always be gatekept. It will not be willy-nilly in the form of an unmitigated wiki. Not at all. I think they're happy to confess to the fact that I do believe the project needs to have a maintained direction, and those robots that were mentioned earlier got into our project as well. We came in one morning and had 489 advertisements for buying gold. So that's have to be careful to a degree. So the couple of things that I'd like to show you about the Pathways project include the concept of nodes. It consists mostly of 2 to 5 page increments. Some of them are longer. There will be maps of nodes. All of these nodes are interlinked. There is a link map function in which we provide possible ways to construe its multiformity, to construe its complexity, but of course a person is free to ignore all of those. We at Full Function will ask visitors when they sign up for an account, the accounts are free, if we are allowed to track them, because we would like to contribute their own surfing programs to a digest of possible link maps, see what people do with it, in other words, and to share what they do with it with other visitors. And then finally, what my IT manager insists on calling a mind map. So this is what the page looks like. Now you obviously come to the welcome page. And this home page, which is in the middle at the top, this shows you what it's linked to and from. Each one of these links is live, so you can navigate immediately to it from wherever you happen to be. So let's just say that, for instance, you're interested in how to get started. Now, getting started is linked to a great more thing. Many more things, which you can again choose from, or you can ignore all of that. Again, it's completely up to you. It's quite a responsibility. Over in the right-hand side, my link map, the site tracks where you've been from the time you first happened upon the project and what you've done. So if we continued, for instance, over here in the left-hand side, we feature some nodes. Say we went to distributed authorship, then it on the right-hand side, we would be shown as having gone to that node from these other two. And that will continue, of course, as you continue to navigate through the project. So the number of other things you can do, one of them is to go to any of the 3 principal nodes. You can see them as I run the cursor over them. They're highlighted here, the 3 agoras. And if you pull one of those up, these are longer pieces. These, if they were printed out, would be on the order of 15, 18, 20 pages, something like that. And that, of course, linked to a great many different things. And there are many links within the nodes, so you can navigate out and navigate back if you choose, or never come. Okay. Then maybe one more thing to show you, just to get a kind of visual impression of what this interactivity means. Do the larger version here. Our IT manager assembled this, which when you expand it a little bit becomes easier to deal with. But this is all the nodes and their linkages to and from each other. The next step, which he's working on now, is to have an animation that actually works its way through this complex. This will, of course, every time these nodes are all active, and if you click on it, will rearrange itself. So you can see that we've been tracking ourselves over here in the right-hand margin. And over here in the left-hand margin, just a few things. We feature certain nodes. We have that disclaimer that's very important. And then the link maps, we have a number of link maps in place and others on the drawing board. And then the e-companions and e-additions that are associated with our center will be accessible from this page. And then when the contributions section is fully implemented, then people will be able to make contributions. We already had one contribution that we really didn't ask for. And so we had to close that off because we weren't quite ready. But this fellow had an article that he was very fond of and found that this was open without any guidance and just put it right in there. I think that's probably not the way we want to proceed in the future. Well, that gives you a little bit of an idea of what we're doing with the Pathways project. Now, I did also want to spend just a minute or two announcing a new society that we're launching in March of next year, calling it the International Society for Studies in Oral Tradition. And the idea is to build upon what we've done with the journal. It's become apparent to me at conferences and in other ways, email and so forth, that people have been using the journal platform to get in touch with one another. So somebody will find something on a particular tradition and they are interested in that, and then they'll simply get in touch with that author and then create a kind of working alliance sometimes with that author. So I thought it might be useful to leverage that kind of connectivity and over all of the readership that's now associated with the journal, and therefore make it easier for people to communicate. So we envision then a shared virtual platform for exchange, founded on the core principle of web democracy, which underlies the mission of both of our centers, to promote interaction and co-learning about oral tradition. Very importantly, I think, to remove financial barriers to exchange. One of the big reasons I moved the journal online 6 years ago was I had letters about every 2 weeks from people in various parts of the world who said, we can't afford the $35, or the currency is not, our currency isn't hard, we simply can't get that money to you. Can you either send it to us free or as an exchange? Well, many times we've done that and seen it come right back. We couldn't get the physical objects to them in various parts of the world. There was one famous example where we had our stationery on top of 30 copies of the journal, and the customs agent snipped out the return address, put it on top of the box, and shipped it back. So what the web does is to create an opportunity to exchange these things. For me, it also entails a responsibility to share these things. So I don't think we can any longer live in the world of research libraries that are off limits to the majority of the world's population. If we really want to study what is the most basic technology, most basic communicative technology of our species, then everybody should be able to apply. And that's the thesis behind this. So we want to also obviously remove geographical barriers to exchange and the brick and mortar distributional barriers. So again, this will be launched in March. The membership will be characteristically free, open. We'll ask people to fill out a brief questionnaire, profile and interests, so to promote collaboration by field and specialties and so forth, both as individual contacts and in virtual working groups. And we envision discussion forums carried on electronically in Connect rooms and in software, that variety, and working papers. We hope to promote webinars, that is international panels and small conferences with video capture where it's possible. This at the level now of the study of oral traditions. The e-archive will be only as a convenience. If people would like to have another copy, a mirrored copy of whatever they have, we'll be happy to host that. And then, of course, it will give easy access to all of our facilities and projects there within the membership agreement. So that's what I have for you today. It is to launch late February, early March. We would love to have any ideas you have to promote collaboration. Again, what can be done on a virtual platform to ease the restrictions that we've wrestled with as textually bound scholars. It's intended entirely as a pro bono facility where Publicus identifies anybody with a web connection, irrespective of where they happen to be or what their university or non-university affiliation might be. So thanks very much for your attention, and I'll be happy to try and address any questions or comments you might have.